Hey, welcome everybody to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim, your host. Yes, I'm actually hosting this episode today in Andy's and Terry's absence, hailing you from Edmonton. So if you're listening to this from the Edmonton area, give me a shout. I'd love to connect with you. Send an email to info@apologeticscanada.com. That will be forwarded to me, and then we can connect with you that way. Again, the email address is info@apologeticscanada.com. And just send me an email there. Now, if you are a regular listener, you've probably heard us cover the court battle that had been going on between Trinity Western University and the Law Society of BC and the Law Society of Upper Canada. We covered that in January of this year, so you can look that up. Last time we invited Andre Schutten on the line to tell us a little bit more about the background of the court case, or rather the set of cases and some of the arguments that were made. So if you haven't listened to that one yet, before you listen to this episode, I highly encourage you to listen to that one first. We'll probably go over some of the same stuff just here and there, but there will be probably a lot of gaps that will be left behind if you don't listen to that one. As of the recording of this episode, June 15th, 2018, just this morning, the Supreme Court actually handed down what many consider to be this landmark ruling. So we actually invited back Andre Schutten from ARPA Canada. He's the Director of Law and Policy and General Legal Counsel for ARPA Canada. He researches and writes on public policy, conducts regular analysis on the impact of different government bills and court judgments. He also represents ARPA in various court interventions, having made arguments before the Supreme Court of Canada several times, including for this set of cases in favor of Trinity Western University and its proposed law school. Thank you, Andre, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to be on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be on Apologetics Canada again.
Yeah, great. Oh, by the way, listeners, if you didn't know this already, Andre actually is scheduled to join us at our upcoming Apologetics Canada conference in March. So mark that on your calendar, and make sure if you're in the area, make sure to come out and check it out in Abbotsford, British Columbia. It's going to be a great time. I've listened to Andre a number of times on various different YouTube videos and things like that, and he's probably one of the most articulate people that I've listened to. So I think you'll enjoy him as much as I did, if not more. So Andre, let's jump right into it. So this ruling, before we jump into it, can you give us a brief history of this set of cases for those listeners that are not very familiar with this case?
Sure. So this legal battle in the courts started about 3 years ago. Trinity Western University, a Christian post-secondary institution, wanted to start the first ever Christian law school in the country. All other law schools in this country are secular. And so they had put forward a number of proposals. Those had been vetted by two different government agencies, both of whom said, yes, this looks good to go. This looks like you're going to create a law school that will produce competent, ethical lawyers who will serve the public good. Thumbs up, green light, go ahead, start your law school. But then the Law Society of British Columbia, the Law Society of Ontario, and the Law Society in Nova Scotia as well, all of them said, yeah, we agree that Trinity Western would produce good, ethical, competent lawyers, but we really don't like the fact that they're a Christian university that has this community covenant. Among other things, that community covenant requires students at Trinity Western to honor a biblical view of sexuality, that is to reserve sexual intimacy for the marriage of one man and to one woman exclusively. And so they said, because of that, we refuse to recognize this law school. And so Trinity Western challenged that in court, and they won at the lower level of court in BC and in Nova Scotia, as well as the Court of Appeal in BC and Nova Scotia, but they lost at the lower court and the Court of Appeal in Ontario. And because we had these differing opinions, it got appealed from both the BC and the Ontario Courts of Appeal to the Supreme Court of Canada. And all of that took 3 years to work its way through the courts. And so today we have a decision from the Supreme Court answering the question whether or not in Canada, in a free and democratic society, can we have a law school like one at Trinity Western that's for Christian students? And very sadly, 7 out of those 9 judges said, no, we can't tolerate that.
Yeah. And so I was actually really surprised by this ruling, because this isn't the first time something like this had happened, because of the... So when Trinity Western, for example, wanted to open up a school of education, we mm-hmm. had the same kind of a court ruling. So I was under the assumption, wrongly, I guess, that the Supreme Court would look to that precedent and rule in favor mm-hmm. of Trinity Western again this time. But that's not what happened.
No, sadly, that's not what happened. I also, as a lawyer trained in a Canadian law school, I also had the assumption that the Supreme Court of Canada would look at a previous decision of very similar facts and very similar legal issues and say, well, look, we said in an 8-1 decision in 2001 that Trinity Western is not for everybody, but it is for this particular group of people. And in a diverse country like Canada, we can afford to have diverse institutions and diverse communities. And so this is a community that we're going to make sure they have space to operate here in Canada too. And yet the Supreme Court today said, nope. In fact, the majority of the Supreme Court didn't even interact with the 2001 decision. It was as if they pretended it wasn't even there. So it's a frustrating decision. It's a disappointing decision, but it's a frustrating decision from my perspective as a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. I actually watched this. I watched this video of you and John Sikkema in front of the Supreme Court, this live Facebook feed that you showed us. Mm-hmm. And there you mentioned that the Supreme Court didn't really interact with the issue of the freedom of association, because as much as this mm-hmm. is an issue of the freedom of religion, perhaps, I thought that this was more of a freedom of association issue. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So I agree with you. I think that this case was, in my opinion, was a stronger case if it had been argued on freedom of association. And that was confirmed for me when I read the majority decision in the case this morning. So freedom of religion is relatively easy in today's climate, in today's culture in Canada, to dismiss or to marginalize or to limit. And so freedom of religion has been viewed by these judges as being a very narrow freedom, mainly individualistic. So they very much downplay the communal aspect of religion, the community aspect where we hold each other accountable to a particular standard, to a particular creed, and so on. They really play that down, and they raise up, you know, individual rights against the community and so on. They play them against each other, and it's actually to the detriment of a robust understanding of religion. But if we had played this through the lens of freedom of association, I think we would have been more successful, particularly because with religion, what many of the judges said is like, look, these Christians, they can go to any law school they want. They don't have to go to Trinity Western University. They don't have to. Their religion doesn't compel them to go to a Christian law school. It's just a preference for them. And so they really downplayed the violation of religious freedom, which is very unfortunate. But if it was freedom of association, you can't say it that way. Freedom of association is not about being compelled to do something. It's about being free to do something together, right? So the question in a freedom of association analysis would have been, in a free country like Canada is supposed to be, in a free country, can we tolerate it that Joe and Jerry and Sally and Sue, all Christians, all want to get together and they all want to study law together, and at the same time hold each other accountable willingly and voluntarily to a particular creed and to a particular covenant? We would say, well, in Canada, that's totally okay. We live in a free country. Of course you can do that. Go ahead. Do that thing, and we won't stand in your way unless there's a really, really good reason that the state says, no, that's intolerable, that we can't allow that because we are a free and democratic society, that association somehow undermines freedom and liberty in this country. But surprisingly, the Supreme Court said, look, we can deal with this all under Section 2A, freedom of religion. And because Trinity Western fails under that one, we're actually not even going to bother with 2D, freedom of association, or Section 15, equality rights. That, too, is actually a shocking analysis on the part of the Supreme Court. You know, if they had been the other way around, if the Supreme Court had said, look, the state has failed to show that it's justified in infringing freedom of religion, then it would make sense for them to say, and therefore we don't have to consider freedom of association and equality rights. But in this case, they said, look, Trinity Western failed to show that they have religious freedom protection, and we're not even going to bother considering their freedom of association rights or their equality rights. And that's just pathetic, in my opinion, from a reasoning perspective.
Yeah, I remember from the oral argument that you made back in November, just heading into December last year, one of the things that you mentioned was that the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is Canada's constitution for our American listeners, you mentioned that this is a shield for the private citizen against the state, rather than a weapon for the state to wield against its citizens. And so an organization like Trinity Western University and its proposed law school would actually receive the benefit of the charter protection, not the other way around.
Yeah, and they don't grapple with that. The dissent does. There's an excellent judgment by two dissenting judges. And again, it's very disappointing that the majority does not interact with that judgment. They, you know, the two dissenting judges are encouraged, they plead with the majority, come on, consider the Constitution, consider the fact that the Charter is a shield, not a sword, consider the fact that Trinity Western breaks no laws, it's not contrary to the Charter, it's not contrary to human rights law. In fact, both human rights law and the Charter protect Trinity Western University. So what in the world are we doing letting different arms of the state, in this case the law societies, what are we doing letting them violate the charter rights of Trinity Western and its community? And yet the majority just ignores it. They don't engage with that at all. That, to me, what it really signaled to me and to others who might be persuaded by our side of the argument, it signaled that the majority of the Supreme Court had a conclusion in mind that they wanted to reach, and they would reason their way there however they could, you know, the law be damned. And I use that phrase very carefully. They didn't care what the law said in 2001. They didn't care that Trinity Western did not violate human rights law. In fact, they benefit from it. They didn't care that the charter protects Trinity Western. They feel, they hold to a morality that says you can do whatever sexual behavior you want, and anyone who says otherwise is somehow harming you. And because they hold to that conviction, that religious conviction, they say that it's secular neutral, but it's not. It's a religious conviction on the part of the majority of judges. Because they hold to that, they were willing to do whatever it took to get to that decision, no matter what the law said.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that the Ontario Court of Appeals did something very similar, in the sense that when they said Trinity Western discriminates against the LGBTQ community, they didn't back it up with any legal analysis. It was just taken for granted, right? And you pointed that out in your oral argument, that had they done this legal analysis, they would have had to reach a very different conclusion. So again, there's this sort of ignoring of this legal process or arguments that need to be taken seriously. I agree with you. It seems to me as though these judges had a bit of an idea in mind, whatever it was that they already wanted to do, and they were kind of heading in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And the question I asked during my oral argument to the court was, if you're going to say that Trinity Western discriminates, you have to answer the question, by what standard? By what standard do they discriminate? Discrimination is a legal term, and it requires a legal test in order to find that you are or are not discriminating. And it's exactly like you say, if you actually do the two legal tests, there's two different tests for discrimination, one for the state and one for private actors. Both of them, if you do both the tests, it's clear Trinity Western benefits from the law. They're not contrary to the law. And again, the dissent actually picked that up on that particular argument that we made. And they go right to that error, and they call it exactly that. Like, they don't use the word embarrassing. I do. It's an embarrassing error for the Ontario Court of Appeal to say that Trinity Western discriminates contrary to the Charter. It's embarrassing because in your very first year of law school, you'll be taught that, well, the Charter actually doesn't apply to private institutions. So they should be ashamed and embarrassed from that judgment. But then a majority of our own Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, goes and repeats the same error. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Mm. One of the things that I noticed was the basis of their judgment seemed to rest on this idea of charter values and public interest, because that was mentioned over and over again. But it doesn't seem very, how do I put this? It's like grasping at water almost, it seems to me. What do we mean by charter values and public interest? How are they measuring this? What even is this?
Yeah, no, and you've picked up on a nuance that's very important to wrap our heads around. So charter rights are, they're listed in the charter. They're written down. They're agreed upon by a constitutional debate in 1982, where the provinces and the federal government and the people of Canada came together and agreed that this will be our constitution. These are the rights of the people, and they're written down and they're written in stone, more or less. And it's up to judges to interpret, you know, whether or not the government infringes those rights moving forward. But now, with the majority decision in this case, they're like, well, there's also these other things called charter values. No one knows exactly which ones are what they are. There's no comprehensive list of them anywhere. Judges will pull them out of the air whenever they feel like a value that they really hold to is being implicated. So in this case, they say, well, there's this charter value out there floating around somewhere, and that charter value is called equality. And we feel that equality and non-discrimination, these values need to be upheld. It's like, okay, fine, do with that what you like, but that's not the law, that's not the Constitution. The Constitution says there's freedom of religion, Section 2A, there's freedom of association, Section 2D, there's equality rights grounded according to a legal test in Section 15 of the Charter. Do the tests, stick to the law as this court has developed it over the last 30 plus years. That's how we determine charter rights. They're not these nebulous concepts that judges get to pluck out of the air whenever it's convenient for them to arrive at the conclusion that they prefer in a case. It's worrisome to me. That's worrisome. I mean, I'm not living in a spirit of fear right now. I'm just concerned for where these judges are going with all of this.
It seems very dangerous to me in the sense that, I'm not a lawyer, so maybe my analysis is off, but as far as I'm concerned, the Constitution should be the most fundamental basis for any sort of legislation or any sort of judicial ruling, so on and so forth. But it seems to me when our judges invoke charter values, it seems to me they're kind of placing something even more fundamental to the Constitution itself. And so then there's what we agreed would be the basis for our laws is then undermined by placing something else that's even more fundamental under our Constitution. Would you say that's a...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, and actually a good number of the judges. So it's a complicated judgment because there's two different judgments, one out of BC and one out of Ontario, and then there are four different parts to it. So there's a majority of five judges who write the majority, and then there's two concurring judges who each write their own. So they agree with the majority in the results, but they add nuances and so on. And then the two dissenting judges write one dissent. So there's actually four judgments times two, so there's eight judgments to read. It's pretty complicated. But of all of the nine, there's four of the five are actually, sorry, four of the nine are actually quite critical of the other five for going down this road of charter values and not nailing that down to the Constitution. So they too see the problems that you've picked up on here, for sure. The other problem is, and you're going at this with the previous question, is this whole question of the public interest. And the majority says that the law societies are allowed to say the public interest is whatever they want it to be. They get to determine what the public interest is, instead of, again, being grounded in some sort of standard. So Trinity Western University has followed the rules from day one. From day one, they put forward a comprehensive proposal. They get it vetted by a national association of law societies. They give them the green light. They get it vetted by the Minister of Advanced Education in BC. That person gives them the green light. They followed the law. They've gone through this process before in Trinity Western 2001 in the Supreme Court decision from 17 years ago where they got their teachers' college approved. So they're following the law exactly as it is. So it's completely unfair in the deepest sense of the word for this small, tiny little institution in Canada to have to fight their way all the way to the Supreme Court, only for the Supreme Court to say, you know what, all those rules that you followed, the law as it is, it's all out the window. We want it to go a completely different way. And sorry, all of this money that and time and effort and prayers and everything else that you've invested into it, out the window. We don't care. We're changing the law now. That should shake every Canadian's confidence in the law as being this solid foundation that we can count on. It's supposed to be a, you know, the law can change and develop as time changes and develops to a certain extent, you know, as technology advances and so on and so forth. But for it to so radically be flipped on its head in such a short amount of time gives nobody confidence anymore in what the law is. How can we trust that the rules that we're playing by today are going to be the same tomorrow?
Yeah, I found that very disturbing too, because I thought to myself, okay, so Trinity Western University followed all of the rules and they met the requirement from these law societies. And then we're hearing that, no, because of this one little segment about your sexual views, according to your Christian values, as stated in your community covenant, you're not fit to be part of us. Now, I thought to myself, okay, so then what would it take for Trinity Western to be part of the legal profession? They would probably have to remove, for example, that segment from the community covenant or just from their values altogether. But then I thought, where does it stop then? Where does it stop? Yeah. Now, what's going to be the next thing? Is it going to be women's rights and their views on abortion? Is that going to be the next thing? So it seems to me then, in order for an institution, a private institution like Trinity Western, to be involved in the public square in, say, the legal capacity, then they basically have to conform to whatever the law societies, their secular views that they hold. And it seems to me like it's just not a sort of this neutral, a negative secularism that the Canadian government is supposed to be based on. Would you agree with that?
I think you've got it there. Like the secularism is not at all neutral. It's hostile to religion. And that's a big problem. And certainly we can't just start whittling away at that community covenant. Sure, okay, scratch the line about sexual morality. Abortion will be next for sure. The new gender revolution is definitely going to be, would be an issue. And on it's going to go. Pornography is legal in this country. You're allowed to look at pornography, but Trinity Western says, well, you're not allowed. Well, what if somebody's addicted to it or something and really wants to get their fix? Do we have to make an exception for him too now? Now, the majority gave a not at all subtle hint to Trinity Western. They said, the problem is the mandatory nature of the covenant, they said. And they even used italics in the word mandatory. So the hint, hint, nudge, nudge is just make that community covenant voluntary, quote unquote voluntary. So students can still come to Trinity Western, but don't get them to sign the pledge, the community covenant. And yeah, we might look the other way next time you apply and make your way through the process. That's the hint, that's the nudge. But the problem with that is twofold. One is, it's not for the courts to tell a religious community what their commitments can and cannot be. That's them unjustifiably interfering in a religious community. But the other problem with it is that community is defined by this covenant and it is voluntary. No one's forcing anybody to go to Trinity Western. The voluntariness is in applying to TWU. You voluntarily apply. It just so happens that part of the package with TWU is this community covenant. It's one package. So it's either, it's all or nothing. If you want to go to there, that's fine. But this is part of what it means to be a student at Trinity Western, is to sign this community covenant and live according to the pledge. I'm kind of flabbergasted that judges, of all people, can't wrap their head around that.
Yeah, so I kind of ran this scenario in my head to see how far it would go. I remember this one case where in California, InterVarsity Group, I believe, Christian Campus Club was being attacked by the university because they were apparently discriminating against atheists because this Christian club wouldn't let an atheist be their president. And so I thought, if this ruling from the Supreme Court today holds true, then what would stop something like that from happening to any religious school? Am I just kind of maybe going too far? Am I just fear-mongering? But as a matter of principle, I don't see how that something like that could be stopped.
It's hard to say. I mean, the case is somewhat fact specific in the sense that they do elevate the practice of law above other schools or other institutions or other professions in a certain sense, right? They say, you know, lawyers have a privileged place in the development of law in this country. Judges have a particularly special role. Law school is the only way to become a lawyer or judge. So in that sense, it's a bit more fact specific. But yeah, the implications, I think, could be potentially quite far-reaching because, you know, there's other snippets in that majority judgment that just, they kind of send chills down my spine and not in the thrilled sort of way, quite the opposite, where they'll say something like, something along the lines of the fact that this community holds these beliefs is in itself harmful to members of the LGBTQ community. Just the fact that a gay person might attend Trinity and Trinity Western has this community covenant, they say that itself elevates the risk of harm to that gay person. Like, and they make that as a finding of fact, even though there's no evidence to support that. On the contrary, there's actually affidavit evidence of gay and lesbian students who did attend Trinity Western University, and they said that they loved it there, that they were happy that they could attend a Christian university that treated them with dignity despite their same-sex attraction. And so here we've got the highest institution in this country, in a sense, like the Supreme Court, is held in high moral regard by the vast majority of Canadians. And that institution, well-respected in this country, says, you know what, if you're a community and you hold these kind of beliefs on sexuality, you're harmful to another segment of this country. That's not cool. That's not cool.
Yeah, it seemed to me that this kind of harm that they're talking about seemed way too hypothetical to me, especially in light of the evidence that you just mentioned, the signed affidavit from gay and lesbian students there.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the other thing is, frankly, it's a bit, to me, it's a bit much to completely lump every single member of the LGBTQ community under one umbrella in one term. They kept talking about LGBTQ community as if they are all of one mind and one opinion on this, which is also, I think, in a sense, is actually quite patronizing towards anyone who might be gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgender or whatnot, because they don't all think the same way. I know many gay men who actually think Trinity Western absolutely should be able to exist and absolutely should have their law school. And they're very frustrated with the way that the Supreme Court is so patronizing and saying that, oh, you know, gay men can't handle the fact that this school would exist and that it hurts, that it has this community covenant and it's such a hurtful covenant. You know, one of my gay friends, he finds that so infuriating that they think that he just couldn't handle that or something like that. You know, it's in that respect, I think the Supreme Court, ironically, is not treating LGBTQ people with the dignity that they deserve. I think that the Christian worldview, the Christian view of human nature and human dignity, actually is much deeper and thicker and more robust than the type of dignity that the Supreme Court is talking about.
Yeah. So then I'm just wondering, so the highest court in the land gave this ruling. So then I'm just wondering, what options are left for Trinity Western University at this point?
Let's see here. So option number one would be to give up and not pursue law school. Option two would be to develop an undergraduate program of law, so kind of like a pre-law program. I'm assuming that that would be okay, but it just wouldn't be able to issue an actual law degree. It'd be like an undergraduate degree in law of some sort. Option three would be get rid of the community covenant and try again, or make it an optional thing to sign if you come to Trinity Western. I think those are kind of the only options they have right now. So, you know, and none of them are ideal.
No. Obviously, this decision is really discouraging for lots of people, including, not just Trinity Western University, but for many Christians and other religious groups around the country. But, I mean, as a Christian, do you have any word of encouragement that you might have to offer?
Well, there's a Bible text that keeps running through my head and has been for the last week, actually, and that's that we do not put our trust in princes. And I would add, or premiers or Supreme Court judges, right? We put our trust in the living God. And as another friend of mine who's intimately involved in the Trinity Western case said, Christ is the solid rock on which we stand. So I think we have to have a long view of this. I mean, Christians still today have lots of freedom in this country. Christians today are doing well in Canada and North America. This decision will definitely make it more difficult for us to live out our faith publicly, particularly in the professions like the practice of law or the practice of medicine and so on. It's going to be more difficult for sure, but don't lose hope. Have a view of the long game. And another thing that I was thinking about in regards to this as well is that I think we can do other things to help encourage Christians be active in the political and legal sphere. So without this law school, we can still do other things. We can equip Christian law students in secular universities across this country to be a witness, to be a shining light. We should not take this decision to be any sort of indication that we should insulate ourselves and hibernate or withdraw from public life. On the contrary, we need to be more engaged, not less. So I really hope that Christians don't take this and say, you know, throw up their hands in despair and say, okay, enough with this. Let's just set up our little communes and enclaves and disengage from Canadian life. And the last thing I'd say is that we also should read this one in connection with a really good judgment from the Supreme Court just 3 weeks ago, where the Supreme Court ruled very strongly in a 9-0 decision in favor of the independence of the church from the state. They ruled that that a secular judge has no business meddling in the membership decisions of an independent church. And that's a good thing. I mean, the message that ends up coming out from those two cases when they're combined is that you can be as Christian as you want and treat other members of your Christian community, you know, hold each other to particular standards of conduct within your church as much as you want, as long as you keep it within the four walls of your church. As soon as you come outside of that church and enter the public square, including the professional sphere or the academic sphere and so on, then it seems the Supreme Court says, well, there the gloves come off. You know, you can't be so Christian anymore. Leave that at the door. But at least, and we can be very thankful for this, the state as yet will not interfere in fact, there's a good, strong judgment that says the secular judges should not at all interfere in membership decisions of local churches. So that's also something to be thankful for.
Well, this is a huge decision that we saw coming out of the Supreme Court, and I'm sure the implications of that, we will have to just keep our eyes open and see what happens there. But again, I'm sure you're really busy with lots of different requests to give your thoughts and input and feedback on this. So I really thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us on the AC podcast, and we look forward to having you at our conference next year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. Lord willing, I can't wait to be part of it.
All right, this wraps up today's episode of the Apologetics Canada podcast. The AC podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Ciao for now.